and welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast. I'm your host, Mary Beth Storjohn, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today, I am so excited to have Jen Henthill on the show. Jen helps busy, determined women who are content with their income, but not their bank account, transform their finances from overwhelming to bringing them financial confidence, control, and freedom. She's a motivational money coach and an accredited financial counselor and the host of the Her Money Matters podcast. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you and be on the other side of the mic as I had you on my show, and it's like one of the popular shows there.
Yeah. So really quickly, talk about what is an accredited financial counselor? What does that mean?
Right. It's not a financial planner, which I always get mistaken for. So basically, the accredited financial counselor, like financial planners, they do provide education. But the difference is I can tell you what the difference between a Roth IRA, educate you on that piece, and what a 401k is, but I'm not going to give you the guidance as to how much of the income should go here and then the different types of funds in the 401k. I don't give you that guidance. I don't have that fancy calculators nor the fancy letters behind my name to do that, like financial planners such as yourself have.
Gotcha. So I know you have a lot of experience with this as an accredited financial counselor and based on what you do. So I wanted to talk today mostly about what has become a derogatory word, budgeting.
Yes.
It's known as the other B word. And I thought we could just kick off with, why do you think people hate budgeting so much?
Well, there's such a huge misconception of what it is. So a budget is literally a plan for your money. So it's the money that's coming in and the money that you decide how it's going out. But the misconception lies as to that is a restrictive thing to do. That budget is about restricting. But really, if you think about it, when you think about it in terms that it is a plan, who controls the plan? You do. You decide what goes in there. You decide how much you spend for groceries, and you decide how much you spend on Starbucks and all those things. And yes, depending on what your situation is and how much extra cash flow you have or you don't have, sometimes you do have to make some sacrifice, but that sacrifice is temporary, right? And it's literally, you know, basically, you know, that with money, in order to have some extra cash flow, there's only two things you can do. You can minimize the expenses or create more income. You know, there's only so much you can do to minimize the expenses. But those things are, and you're in control. And really the misconception is that it's about restricting yourself, which it's not, because it's your plan. And you're the one that you're in control, and you're the one that makes the shots.
When it comes to creating that plan, where do people start with a budget? Where do you see, or where do you direct women to start when they're creating cash flow for themselves?
Absolutely. Well, there's some pre-budgeting things that you need to do. One is you have to choose a tool that works for you. Now, I love my spreadsheet to death. Not everybody loves spreadsheets,
right? I love
spreadsheets.
I'm a huge spreadsheet person,
I love my spreadsheet. I have tried software. I've tried the apps, but I'm not consistent with those. It literally goes back to the spreadsheet. So it's really finding a tool that works for you and that you'll be consistent with. And sometimes you don't know what that is. So you just try it out and for a few months, and if it doesn't work, try something else. So you have to find that tool that works for you. Then you have to also pick a schedule that works for you to when you're going to check in with your finances, when you're going to manage the money plan or the budget that you're creating. You also need to be flexible as well. I think that's so key, because sometimes we become so stringent on what we're supposed to do, but I think we need to give ourselves the grace and be flexible. But the other part of it, before you even start putting the pieces together on the budget, I mean, is to know where all the expenses are going. And that's where people get stuck. I see this over and over again. It's that piece is the budget overwhelms them because they don't know what to do with it, but it's because they have to get clear as to where that money is going. And so those are the things that you need to do to even, you know, before you start budgeting.
Yeah. And the thing that I found in addition to that, even before you start to even figure out where the expenses are, and I was just talking about this on another podcast interview, is also you have to be clear on what your goals are. You have to understand. So I talked a lot about, you know, in budgeting, I think you're right. I think the misconception is that it's really restrictive when actually a budget allows you to, I say, allows you to put your money where your heart is. And so when you're really clear on where those, what those goals are and what is important to you, then it becomes more empowering to actually look at your money and say, okay, here's where it's going. Now, where do I want it to go? And what are those goals? And how do I align it there?
Absolutely. No, you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely.
So when it comes to being super strict or super detailed, how detailed do you think a budget needs to be from your experience?
Well, it all depends, because I see there's like different stages in your money journey, right? And depending on the different stage that you're in really depends how intense, if you will, you need to be with your budget. So like the first stage is like when you're in complete chaos. That's basically the most frustrating stage where people get really the most stuck on too long, or worse yet, they stay there for a long time, right? So this is where you've tried to get your money under control with little or no success. But something just always seems to get in the way. And at this stage too, you just tend to give up until the next inspiration strikes to get your money together again. So this is a cycle that just kind of repeats itself until you have like an aha moment. So that is where like the budget intensity, if you will, is high, or like it's needed, but it's non-existent.
So
right?
Where do you start? I know a lot of women are in that chaos stage, and then they tend to bury their head in the sand and do nothing. The doing nothing happens an awful lot.
Absolutely. And that's where, like when you mentioned getting clarity on like what your goals are, you want to know that. But really taking some time without the overwhelm where you piece together where everything is, where everything goes, right? Where all the expenses are. So not just, you know, the easy part is the fixed bills that go out every single month, right? Then you have to account for the variable monthly bills or expenses, I should say, like the groceries. So sometimes you may spend, you know, sometimes you spend a little more on groceries than others. So it's not a fixed expense, it's a variable expense. So you have to think about what you want, how does that fit in your picture? And you also want to think about those non-monthly expenses, which is super important, because that's where I see a lot of people get stuck, where let's say you go to the salon. I don't go to the salon to get my haircut every single month, but let's say you go once every 2 months or once every 3 months. It's not accounted for within that money plan, within your budget. So when you go to the salon, that's going to throw that cash flow off, even though depending on how much you pay for that haircut. So those non-monthly expenses need to be accounted for. And what I see too is that the people will take a guess, right? Which is fine, which is you guesstimate approximately how much on a monthly basis, even if the expense is, this is the other part. When the expense is non-monthly, I always teach my clients to come up with a monthly number to put in their monthly plan, okay? So you put that in the monthly plan, but what people don't do, they leave it there, but they don't do anything with it. So what needs to happen is with those, I just said the salon or trips, those things that you put away for, you have to take that extra step, because obviously your budget doesn't talk to your bank account. So you take the extra step of separating that money on a monthly basis. I do it on a monthly basis just because it makes things easier and more manageable. And once you do that, you look at what that looks like, but you also want to know what your bottom line is. So what I mean by your bottom line is you have your income, you have your expenses, you've included your fixed expenses, you've included your variable expenses like the groceries, like the gas for the car, and you've also included your non-monthly expenses, which can be trips to the salon, it could be medical expenses maybe, it could be those type of things. Sports camps, I've got boys, that's common here. So you include that, and then you're going to have a bottom line number, which is the income minus expenses. So I really work on assigning every dollar something to do, right? So I really work on having the zero-based budget system, if you will, where once you find your bottom line, it goes three ways. It's going to be in the negative, where you quote-unquote overspent. It's going to be zero, where every penny is accounted for. Or it's going to be in the positive, meaning there's some extra money that wants to work for you. What are you going to use that money for? Okay, so you want to know what that bottom line number is looking like, so you can then, once you know what you want, right, your goals, you find out what your bottom line, and then you can work from there as to what do you need to do. Do you need to minimize some expenses? Do you need to generate more income? What is it that you need to do to be able to get you to where you want to be?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I look at as well. So you have the, like you said, what's the bottom line there? So almost building your current budget, so what's actually happening today, and then building a projected one, what changes need to be made. So if you're looking at your current budget and you're not saving for retirement, and or you don't have a debt pay down plan and your money's all going to dining out or travel, well, that's current, but it's not actually sustainable. So then you have to build a projected one and make some of those adjustments in there.
Absolutely.
And what are the key issues? I mean, I just named two, but what are the key areas where you see a lot of people overspending?
Food.
Food. I know, right? The dining out, is a lot of people have no idea what they spend on dining out, and groceries too.
Yes. Yes. Don't go grocery shopping hungry.
Yes. And it was so interesting. I was just speaking about this with somebody that when you have those goals in place, those things that are important to you and you know what you value, then when you look back at your cash flow, if, for example, shopping at Whole Foods is something that's really important to you, and that's something that you value, is having that fresh, healthy food for you and your family. Well, great. Then you know maybe that's a number that stays and that you're going to have to adjust in other areas. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to cut back there. You just know that that's so important to you that you're willing to move and reduce other goals because of that thing that you value. And I think that's the interesting part, is how you use a budget to make those empowered decisions, as opposed, again, to feeling like you have to cut back on Whole Foods, for example, if that's important to you, when really there's other areas and opportunities for you to reduce spending to allow for that.
Oh, absolutely. Or it could, you know, I love that you brought the values up, because I think that's something that's so important and so key that we need to just check in and every once in a while, you know, with the online banking, or if you use a credit card, or you can look at those statements and look where your money is going. And is it really, if you look at those and you're finding some trends, you're spending, I don't know, maybe there's some subscription service that you don't even use, and you're thinking to yourself, that's not really important for me. So you really you need to check in every once in a while to make sure that your spending is definitely aligned with the values.
Yeah. And I think also, when it comes to those restrictions and those goals and things that we're trying to work towards, I think that we all have a lot going on. We all have a variety of things. You just mentioned the sports camps, and there's travel, and you know, there's always, life is always happening. And so we always have multiple goals and priorities. And I think the thing to remember is that you can do it all, but you can't do it all at once. And so absolutely, it really is, when you're looking at your cash flow and you're trying to accomplish 10 things, then also, you know, buy a new car, for example, that might not all fit. So if you're overwhelming yourself and you're finding yourself stretched, then picking those 2 to 3 most important goals right now and working towards those are very likely going to make you a lot more progress than trying to do 10 things at one time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who can do so many
accomplish?
And that's the thing with us women. We wear so many hats, and we feel like we have to do everything, but we don't. And from trying to do everything, we don't progress as much. So I definitely agree. Focus on a few things and get those done before you move on to the next.
So I want to talk briefly about, I know you and I are both spreadsheet ladies, and I love my spreadsheets. My husband's like, you open the spreadsheet again, dear Lord, because I'm constantly in there finagling things. But aside from spreadsheets, what have you found are some of the top tools that maybe your clients use or that have worked for them?
Right. I know a lot of people, my clients and just people in general, Mint comes up a lot. The app, is it Every Budget from Dave Ramsey? Mm. That's one that comes up a lot. I have a client that swears by, oh gosh, it's, and the name is escape me. It's like a, it looks like a bank ledger. Like if you're balancing your checkbook,
you need a budget.
No, that one's another one that comes up, but no, it's a different one. But it just looks like a bank ledger. Like you can just literally mark off. Oh. Yeah. So that's another, that's one that she just literally swears by. But those are the main ones. The Every Dollar, the YNAB is another popular one. But the ones that I've used my spreadsheet, have, they just come back to it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Spreadsheet. Then I tried YNAB a while ago, but I know I have some clients who swear by it. And then Mint has been always a popular one. And Mint is good in terms of if you're just getting started for like back to that chaos, right? If you're in the chaos stage and you have no idea where your money is going, Mint is something where you can leverage and say, let me sync up my accounts and Mint will tell me where my money is going. As opposed to you having to pour through receipts and statements, it kind of analyzes it. You have to do some training to kind of teach it a little bit, but it'll at least tell you, you know, what's happening. So you can at least create that current cash flow to start. So on the budgeting, so there's the apps, and then what's your take? You mentioned credit cards as an option, I mean, cash. How do people actually implement the budget once they have it?
Right. Well, you definitely have to create a system for yourself as to how you're going to carry out that map, that plan that you created. And there's different ways to do it. Of course, we've heard the cash envelope system. Right. Some people do the credit cards. That's not for everyone. Right. Mm-hmm. You have to know yourself. You have to know your limits. Are you going to splurge? Are you going to know that once you hit a certain threshold that you're not going to use again? That's something that you have to yourself answer. I mean, that's one way to go to make things easier as far as looking at all the expenses. And if you're a travel hack or that type of thing. But there's also, and I know you do this, something similar, a virtual envelope method, right? Or a virtual envelope system where, for me, and what's worked really well for me and some of my clients and that really love this part is having, it's basically a cash envelope system, but with different bank accounts. So literally what I do, I have a hub account. So that's where all the income goes. And from there, I have different accounts for different purposes. And really, it just allows me to really visualize and see what's there. So I have accounts for our goals, our travel, our future car. Obviously, for retirement, that's taken care of, right? You know, just it's not in our bank account. And then I have like the daily spending. I have that separated. So it's easier to see. And it's an easier way to track your expenses versus, and because here's the thing, you can have all your money in one account, but it's, and you can have your budget saying, okay, I have set $400 for groceries and I don't know, $200 for gas. I'm just making these numbers up and whatever the case. And then you have to mentally add the numbers, make sure it's less, you know, up to 400 or less than $400, depending on what time of the month it is. Then you have to go and make sure, see what the total amount is in that account and make sure that everything works, right? That everything is how it's planned. But by separating it, if you separate, like say, let's say the $400 example for groceries, once that money is gone and it's gone, right? And it does so many different things. It helps you stay on track with what you, with the plan that you created. It also helps in terms with non-monthly expenses. So for example, our quarterly bills, things that come up, I separate those. I have a monthly amount. And this is what I teach my clients, separate that on a monthly basis. And once that bill is due, the money's there. So all you have to do is transfer that money in, pay the bill, and you're done. So there's, you know, so it's basically pick a system that works for you. There's clients that I work with that do both a cash envelope system because there is something to be said. It doesn't work for me. I don't know. I'm different with cash, but for some, there's something to be said with the power of handing over some $20 bill and getting a penny back, or, you know, there's something to be said. So some clients use a combination of a cash envelope system and the virtual one, but it's just basically picking a system that you will use, setting it up in a way that will work for you, because every how you set it up is different on your needs.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing you mentioned too, is it's okay to customize and create something that works for you. So I just was talking to a client, we were going through their cash flow, and we decided the one category they're going to cash for is dining out, because that is the hardest for them to keep under control. So we basically said they'll pull money out every 2 weeks. That's the money they have for dining out, and everything else can sit in the account because it's a little bit more under control. But so if you have a problem area where you don't quite trust yourself, and you know, yes, give up the credit card points. You don't need credit card points for everything if it's throwing off your cash flow. So then go to cash for that, for that thing. And you're right, we do the exact same thing in our house. We do the paychecks all go into one account, and then we have a separate travel savings fund. We have an insurance fund for life insurance premiums that come due annually, and the car insurance, homeowners, we basically put aside monthly, and then the bill just came due for auto insurance, and I have the money in the account to the penny for the 6 months.
It's beautiful,
and
right?
So it's there, and so I'll just transfer it over, pay, and there's nothing coming, you know, that's changing in our cash flow. So, and the thing that's different that I think we do in our house is, basically, I've divided all of our bills into two categories, where it's basically either paid on the, you know, the first paycheck of the month or the second paycheck of the month, the first or the 15th. And so when our paychecks hit, it's allocated for the first or the 15th. I go in on our spreadsheet and I do all the savings. I back out all of the bills that are going to come due. I project, basically, we project high, and then we have a leftover amount. And so that's actually how we budget with what's left over in that amount. Then that's what we have for groceries, dining out, gas, kind of those discretionary items for that 2 week period. And sometimes we'll like calculate it out. We'll say we have $60 a day or 75, whatever it is, you know.
Right.
But we have that leftover amount every 2 weeks. And so that works for us too. If you divide your bills up and back them out, then if you're good with the leftover amount and you can make that work, then that's what works for you. So it's just, you know, and I'm sure you see this too with clients, it's one of the things of how detailed do you need to be to hold yourself accountable?
Right. And then there's different, you know, you can do it by percentages, like where you take your money and with certain percentages go to your spending, certain percentage goes to your savings, your retirement, all that. There's so many different ways to do it, and you have to find one that works for you.
Mm-hmm. When you look at a cash flow for a client, how do you help them to kind of prioritize their goals? What do you talk them through with their savings?
First, when we first start talking, I want to know what is it that they want to accomplish, right? And then from there, we look at how they're spending and what they are doing on a monthly basis to manage their money. Sometimes it's absolutely nothing and they're just praying everything works out. And sometimes they have, I see a checklist and they think it's a budget, right? So it's just literally them checking off that they're paying off their bills. So it's literally getting to know what they want to accomplish, what they're doing, what has worked in the past, what hasn't, and from there establishing a plan to see how we can get them to where they want to be.
From your experience, how long does it usually take for your clients and for people to see an impact of working with a budget in their lives?
It depends on like what the stage they're at when I start working with them. Sometimes they're at their stage where they haven't really done anything. And so that takes, you know, to see an impact, it's 6 months or so. Really, when I've worked with clients, I would say about 6 months to see some sort of impact. That doesn't mean it's going to be perfect because life happens. Sometimes you have to adjust. And that's why I think it's so important to be flexible with yourself, because you just don't know what life brings next and you have to adjust for that. But the other clients that come to me that are just stuck in a certain form, that may take them 3 months or less, just because they already have some ducks in their row. They already have done some budgeting to some extent, so they don't have as much work to do in that area.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, I see the same thing. I always say a cash flow, we started at the beginning of an engagement, and that's something that is just being worked on the whole time. It takes at least a couple of months to figure out what's going on, then to implement the changes, and then to see the impact of the changes that you're implementing. So it's definitely an ongoing process. And
it is.
And that's the important thing to remember going into creating a cash flow for yourself, is that it doesn't fix things overnight. And so that's what you have to have the mentality of, you're in it for the long term.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Once people have implemented a budget or cash flow system for themselves, what are you seeing the effects? What are your clients who have been working with you on this stuff for 6 months, 12 months? What are the changes that you're seeing?
They get excited. Where before they were fearful and overwhelmed with money, they get excited. They are looking forward to looking at their money. That's like the first thing that I see is just the excitement. I never thought I would get excited about money. So that and confidence, because they're not, that is another huge one as well. Confidence. And then when I work with clients that are married, things shift in their relationship where there's more communication the money talk is more, where before it was kind of a very stressful topic. So those things definitely change. And I love seeing that.
Yeah, because it's exciting, right? Once you have that cash flow system in place and you're saving towards goals, then you're actually able to look at your accounts and see your money growing. And then that, of course, feels empowering. And then you feel like, hey, I've got control over this stuff. And it's not as scary anymore. And it really is. And I think it goes back to what you said in the beginning. There's this big misconception about budgeting has to be restrictive, when really it actually opens up so many doors for you and so many opportunities that allow you to use your money to make yourself happy, as opposed to actually depriving yourself.
Right. And something that also comes up too, as we go through this process, once they get excited and they gain the confidence, because as you know, personal finance is personal and unique, and there's no cookie cutter approach to this. But I also see them when we meet for sessions is, oh, you know what? They get empowered to think more as to what they want and why they want it. And things shift. Maybe some goals shift slightly, where maybe they were retirement was a big thing, but it's become a bigger priority where they want to increase more of their savings or the allotment to retirement or whatever a case may be for that. Or maybe in the process, we only found, I don't know, I'm making up numbers here, but maybe we found that they can put an extra $100 to the debt that they were working towards paying off. And in the process, because of that empowerment, they are so motivated that they found another extra $100 or $50 or whatever, because they're seeing progress. And once you get into action and see the progress and see some results, you get more excited, and somehow the fog in your brain lifts and you're able to see more and see what else you can accomplish. So that in itself is empowering.
Yep. I completely agree. I mean, I still get excited over our budget. I'm constantly, every time I get to transfer money to our savings, I'm like, yay. I have a weird competitive thing with myself though. So I'm constantly checking in on our net worth too. And that's, I mean, that ties into when you're saving towards your future, then you get to actually, you start tracking your net worth and you're watching your money and your net worth grow over time. And you're seeing your financial health is actually improving.
Absolutely. Yeah. And net worth is another thing that I like to talk about too, because a lot of people are afraid of that, but that's something you have to track, because you can't get better unless you know where you started, right?
So true. So true. Okay. So let's transition to some of the wrap-up questions that I do here on the show. What would you say is the best financial advice you have ever received?
Definitely pay yourself first. Ooh, definitely. Yes. By far. Because sometimes, well, with life, I know I mentioned life happens, that we end up taking care of other things first, and we don't leave enough for ourselves. So really paying ourselves first, putting that in the plan. And because I always allot for, that's not the last thing that I do. That's a part of the plan. That is not like, if we have money left over, this is what we'll do with it. It's a priority. So really pay yourself first has been the best one.
Yeah. Just get started. Yeah. Something, anything, any amount, I think getting used to paying yourself is huge.
Yes.
So to flip that, what would you say is the worst money advice you've ever received?
Worst money advice. That is a good question. I would think for me is the credit card part. I have a back and forth. I go back and forth with a credit card. I know it's not for everyone, but I think there's, to some extent, I know some people say, well, just use the credit card and pay it off at the end of the month, which is how you should do it. but not everyone can do that. So I think that has been, and not the worst for me, because if we use a credit card, it's a done deal, you pay it off. But I think it's bad advice that anybody can use a credit card, because I think it stems, there's a lot of things that need to be considered, impulse spending, your past habits and all that I think using a credit card is just something that you have to think about more thoroughly.
It's true. It's one of those, also I found that it's almost something that's FOMO, the fear of missing out now. Everybody uses their credit cards to get points, and so therefore I should use my credit card to get points, when maybe that's not the best for my situation because I have, impulse spending tendencies, or I'm not great at tracking my cash flow. So you almost use them to your own detriment.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge travel hacker. If the points accumulate, great, but there's certain things, like, we'll use a credit card, but there's certain things we won't use a credit card for, especially I'm married, so our spending habits are different. So we won't use the credit card for groceries or eating out. That is something we won't do, because that is something my husband likes to splurge on those areas. That is like something we can go over on. So there's certain things that we definitely don't. And like I said, if I'm not a big travel hacker, there's other things. I mean, there's airline, when the airlines have their sales, there's those things. There's this great, great service. It's called Scott's Cheap Travels. So I love travel, so that's what I'm talking about. But you can subscribe to his free emails, and he like literally sends you when some tickets are on sale, right? So there's different things that you can do that doesn't require travel hacking all the time.
Yes, travel hacking is very trendy right now. Mm-hmm. I shore up all of our points, and sometimes we cash them in for travel, sometimes we cash them in for gift cards for Christmas gifts. Mm-hmm. So it just really depends on, yes, it's not necessarily always the best thing to do. Okay, and then what is your favorite money mistake you've made?
Is not saying no. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, my husband is, I mentioned, he likes to splurge, right? And he likes to buy things sometimes that are just for fun. That for me, they're not a necessity. And so what I mean by saying no is that I might find a way to make it happen. Mm. So for me, it's just, I haven't put us into debt because of that, but maybe I have taken some money out of emergency savings that didn't need to go out, those type of things. I've gotten better because we have better systems in place to really negate that part. But yeah, that for me, that saying no has been a difficult thing, especially when he's in the military, and I'm like, he works so hard. He deserves this. We have to find a way. So that has been a big one.
That's really interesting. So it's a little bit of financial enabling, right? Saying, not saying mm-hmm. no. And I saw that a lot growing up in my family, that especially when you work hard and as your spouse works hard, and you want them to be able to have all the nice things. And that's really interesting. And I think you're right. It's something that you have to be aware of it, and then you really have to work through it, right? And I'm sure absolutely. The communication is probably huge with you two around that, because you have to express that, of course, I want you to have these things, but here are the goals that we're working towards, and you have to be at a place where you're comfortable having those conversations, right? So it's really, absolutely. It's really interesting.
I mean, now we have an account. I have separate accounts for different things, as I mentioned, and like one in the military, those uniforms are not cheap.
Right?
No, they're and not cheap whatsoever. And for some reason, my husband, he is very particular on, I mean, he is in the military. I guess that's to be expected. But the ABUs, like, I look at them, they don't look like they have faded. Somehow to him, they're faded and he needs a new one. So what does that mean? Not just buying the uniform, you have to replace the patches. You have to get it fitted, because he has to get it fitted. I'm calling him out. Like he likes. There's different things. So it costs a lot of money. So we've got an account just for uniforms, just because I know he likes to replace them. It drives me nuts. But that's, it's important to him. It's a big priority for him. So we plan for those. And that's something that I've learned. And sometimes the other issue was, quote unquote, lending money to family. That was also a big thing in our marriage, where I'm like, why are you going to lend money to family? You know, for me, it was like enabling, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So we set some money aside. If we have it in there, you know, we don't expect it back, but it's something that's important. He's got a big heart. Not that I don't. I do, I promise.
No, I'm the same way. I am the same way. No, when we're in the fine, we're digging into the fine. I'm the same way. A separate account, if we have the money available, it's a gift. It's not a loan.
Exactly.
We don't expect it back. That's that way, that just makes it less stressful all around to be able to do those things. I completely agree. And then finally, what does being wealthy mean to you?
Wealthy for me means, and I know it's cliche to say freedom, but really because once we've paid off our debt, I've seen such a huge difference. So it's not about a certain number. Yes, we have certain numbers we're striving for, but it's about the flexibility that not being tied to debt, not being tied to living paycheck to paycheck, those type of things, the flexibility that it gives for you to do things, to have your cake and eat it too, for you to travel like you want to travel, for you to maybe work part-time. Like I was able to, early on in our marriage, when we had our first child, I stopped working the 9-to-5 job, right? And that was a decision. But it just, you know, having the systems in place, being consistent with the goals that you want to achieve, and achieving a level of success that makes you happy, that gives you that freedom and that flexibility to do what you want to do.
Yeah, I never get tired of hearing that being wealthy means freedom. Because when we are in the day-to-day struggle, I think it's so easy to look at the numbers. You think about the amount of money, but when you stop to actually reflect and think about your life and what it really means, freedom. It's the freedom and flexibility. It's true. It's yes, to have your cake and eat it too. I love that one. That is unique, and that's exactly what being wealthy means. So I never get tired of hearing it. So Jen, tell our listeners how they can contact you.
Just over at jenhemphill.com. You can find me. You can find my podcast. That's called Her Money Matters. And you can find my community as well.
Perfect. I will link to all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on the show. I loved getting to talk with you about budgeting. It's one of my favorite topics. And
likewise.
I think it's exciting.
Yes, I know. All us spreadsheet girls and
I know.
Money girls. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to Work Your Wealth. If you enjoyed today's episode, I'd love if you could take 2 minutes to head over to iTunes to leave a quick review and rating for the Work Your Wealth podcast and share your thoughts on the show.